Good morning, and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable at the Rosamond Gifford Zoo. This is great. I don't know if coming in, some of you met Drogon. Drogon is here with us today. Drogon is a bearded dragon. Say hello. And outside we had Anakin. Anakin is the Harris hawk.
There he is. There he is.
Isn't he gorgeous? Beautiful. So I want to start out by thanking the zoo and the Friends of the Zoo for hosting this morning's program. And thank all of you for finding your way here. Before we get started, I wanted to give you a quick heads up on the next 4 or 5 weeks of programs. We'll be ending the season pretty shortly, so I know you won't want to miss anything that's coming up. Next week, I think I might have mentioned, we'll be hearing from the CNY Fair Housing Coalition, an assessment of fair housing for Onondaga County and the City of Syracuse. They've had a pretty major project going on and a report that really is relative to the entire county, not just the city, but the county. So I know that a lot of you are going to be interested in that, and you'll be surprised to hear what they found. November 20th, later in the month, we'll be hearing from Onondaga County Executive Joni Mahoney. And then right after Thanksgiving, we'll have an update from Consensus CNY, the Commission on Local Government Modernization. We'll be having at least one of the co-chairs, Dr. Neil Murphy, along with the head of the Center for Governmental Research, the consultant that's been collecting the baseline data. And you will be surprised at some of the trends that they've been collecting, time trends, information on not just city, county, but your towns, villages, fire districts, functions. It's fascinating and enlightening. So then we will end up the season with Syracuse City School District Superintendent Sharon Contreras. So that's all coming up, and looking forward to seeing you there. Right now, again, I'm just so grateful to the zoo for hosting us, and I'd like to introduce Janet Agostini, a TMR member, president of the Friends of the Rosamond Gifford Zoo at Burnett Park. Janet is a longtime resident of Central New York and, of course, a longtime animal lover. Prior to joining the Friends, she was vice president of student recruitment and communications at Onondaga Community College. She's also held management positions in the high-tech and healthcare sectors. She has a degree from Keuka College. Since joining Friends, she's led an expansion of the organization, resulting in increased support of the zoo, a capital campaign supporting the Primate Park, Asian Elephant Preserve, and the Green Courtyard improvements. I hope you notice those on your way in, the Save the Rain infrastructure. If not, do take a couple minutes to admire it on the way out. It's not only beautiful, it's very functional. Anyway, without further ado, Janet, who will also be introducing her colleague, Ted Fox, who is director of the zoo. Thanks, Janet.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, everyone, for being here. We couldn't be more pleased to host you here at the zoo. So I'll tell you a little bit about what we're going to do in our presentation, and I'll be introducing my colleague and partner here at the zoo, Ted Fox. We'll talk to you a little bit about some basic centering facts about the zoo that you may or may not know. We also completed a strategic and master planning process. It took us 13 months for our visioning, and so from the comfort of your chairs, we are going to walk you through the Zoo of the Future. And after that, we'll have time for any questions that you might like to pose to us. So I'm very pleased to introduce you to Ted Fox. He's the zoo director. Ted has been with the zoo since 1991. So he has a long, long history with our zoo. Started out as a volunteer, as keeper, went up the ranks, and now holds the position of zoo director. Ted has a degree from Cornell University in animal science. And I have come to know, over the years that I've worked with Ted, there really isn't many questions you can ask him that he can't answer. He knows so much about animals. He knows so much about the botanicals that we have here at the zoo. But I will tell you, he is a foremost expert on all things birds. So if you have any questions about that, Ted was instrumental in getting our penguin exhibit up and going in 2005 when that opened. And I will tell you that authorities around the country thought that it would be about 5 years before we had any hatchings. And it was within the first year that we were successful. And that's largely due to the work here from the man on my left. So we have other colleagues from around the world who come and take a look at our exhibit to see why it's been so successful and how it is that we manage our penguins. So our penguins are very famous. So Ted Fox.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Thank you very much, Janet. I couldn't ask for a better partner in the co-management of the zoo. Janet's always there and is supportive, and she's so passionate about the animals that we have here at the zoo and taking care of the staff and the facility and everything else. So I couldn't do it without her, certainly, and I appreciate that, Janet. So we're going to talk a tiny bit about the history of the zoo, because I think that's an important place to start. For those who remember, in 1914, you might not remember that far back, but 1914 is when the zoo opened, and it was only on 4 acres, and we had a small group of domestic animals, goats, rabbits, sheep, that kind of thing, like many zoos across the country at that time. It was a small community zoo on the 4 acres, and we also had a really nice waterfowl pond, which were very popular back in the day. The educational programs that we have and we've built the zoo up to over 700 animals that live here now, reside at the zoo now. Many, many species, and we're on 43 acres, which we've continued to grow. Like so many zoos across the country, you had kind of got to the point where you had to make a decision about whether you're going to become a really great facility, and our community certainly stood up at every time we've had some trouble and wanted to support the zoo and grow it. So today we're on 43 acres and have over 700 animals. And as Janet mentioned about the penguin program, there's many of the species that we have that we've become renowned nationwide for, like sloths and Asian elephants. So it's really great. We also have the education department, which falls under Janet's leadership and the Friends' leadership. And we've gotten to be very, very prominent in the community. This year, we started a program with the Syracuse City School Districts, and all the first and second graders are going to be visiting the zoo in their school year. So that's a really remarkable thing. We've grown from a few thousand, few hundred people visitors each year to over 372,000 visitors a year, and that continues to grow every year. So that's very, very substantial. Many people that come to the door don't realize, but we're co-managed by the Friends organization and the County Parks Department. So we like to make that as seamless as possible, and whatever person that you meet in your visit here at the zoo, we don't want them to know whether it's a Friends employee or a county employee. It's a zoo employee that's here to make your experience that much better. And the final point I'd like to make about the zoo today, there are thousands of zoos across the country that call themselves zoos, but there's a very small percentage. There's only 221 of the thousands that are accredited by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. And there's a reason for that, and that is the standards are so high. And I'm very happy to say that we meet and exceed all the standards that are set forth by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, from education to animal care to veterinary care to staffing, everything across the board, which tells our visitors when they come through the door as an accredited institution, they're in for a really exceptional experience. They can see in the animal collection that they're very, very well taken care of.
So I think that's important to talk about the AZA accreditation. When you support the zoo, you know that you're supporting the very highest in animal care and guest experience. So if I could just switch back to one thing I wanted to call your attention to. We titled our talk today, Why Zoos and Aquariums Matter. And I call your attention to this particular quote, which we think sums it up. If all the beasts were gone, men would die from a great loneliness of spirit. For whatever happens to the beast also happens to the man. All things are connected. So this was a quote in a letter by a Native American chief out in Seattle that to President Franklin Pierce. And President Franklin Pierce was inaugurated in 1853, and we think that this absolutely still resonates today. So that's why we think zoos and aquariums matter. So a little bit more about where we're headed. Ted talked to you about some of the basic things about the zoo that you may or may not have known. Over the last 13 months, we have engaged in a strategic and master planning process. What we wanted to do was to work with specialists in the zoo and aquarium industry. So these master planners that work with us only do zoos. We wanted to get the benefit of all of their knowledge. We came together as partners, the county and the Friends, co-funded this project. We went to our staff first to ask them what they thought. We worked with our members, with community leaders, with our community partners. I see Ginny Carmody here from Literacy Coalition. She's one of our great partners that we do two programs with Literacy Coalition. So what we wanted to do was to develop a shared vision for the zoo and where we thought that the zoo should go within the next 20 years or so. We also wanted to position the zoo as the regional destination. You know, we have many, many assets here in Syracuse and lots of reasons why people would want to come to Syracuse to spend their time and their leisure dollars. And we want the zoo to be a big part of that economic development here in the region. We have a number of visitors that come to us from Ottawa. I was on a trip up to Ottawa with the CVB, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, talking to tourism professionals. They are all about Syracuse. I have to tell you, we didn't have to sell anything. They love bringing their guests down here to Syracuse. It's a three-hour trip. It's very easy to get here. Their money goes farther. They love our theater. They love our restaurants. And when they found out that there was a zoo within 2 miles from a major shopping destination, they were all excited. And so were we, because we want those visitors to come here. I will tell you that 2 months ago, we had 480 visitors from Toronto on tour buses on their way to Albany. They made a special stop here in Syracuse to see our zoo. Now, Toronto has a fabulous zoo, but what they don't have anymore are elephants. And they came to see our six Asian elephants. So it was a fabulous day with those folks and getting a lot of feedback. So we felt it was very, very important. How do you want to grow the zoo? Where do you want to go? You need to have a strategic, well-thought-out plan for your growth. Otherwise, it happens in a haphazard fashion. And I will tell you, working with funders, working with our members and our guests, and talking out in the community, everybody always asks, what's next at the zoo? So now we have a terrific answer for everybody. The last strategic plan was 2002 to 2007, and the last master plan, which is a really comprehensive site plan, was done in 1980 when the zoo closed down and built back up. So all of those projects had been completed. The time was just right. We had come off a successful capital campaign, bonded funding for three very important projects here at the zoo. The partnership between the county and the Friends had never been stronger, so we thought the time, everything had coalesced to doing this project.
So, as Janet mentioned, it was a 13-month process, and the very, very beginning when we met with Zoo Advisors, the agency that we contracted with to do the planning sessions, we had to formulate and come up with the planning committee that was going to do the real, real hard work. So it was an equal amount of people from the Friends organization and the county. Again, as Janet mentioned, this is the first time in history that both groups have really wanted to do something together and had the same goals in mind. You know, it's the future of the zoo, it's the next 20 years, equal partnership, and as Janet said, the time was perfect to get this all together and spend some really hard and good time to do that. So there were many phases throughout the planning sessions, and there was first the discovery. So we had information gathering from all the stakeholders in the community, lots of funders from the past, foundations, certainly the leadership from the zoo and the county and the Friends, and everybody kind of came together, started giving their ideas about of what they wanted to see come, and what our strengths and weaknesses are currently. And then the dreaming part, which was a lot of fun, was to redevelop our mission and vision and what we have here already that we could enhance to make it that much of a better experience for people. The next part of the dreaming phase was the Blue Ribbon panel, which was very exciting, and we brought in renowned folks from all across the country in specific things. There was a Steve Martin, who's a very famous animal trainer who has worked with Disney in San Diego. He helps bring the animals to the forefront of the experience for the visitors. We had some local folks, Sherry Abbott from SU and Eric Mauer from his company, brought their great ideas in to talk about what we already have, what maybe would be the best steps to take first. And then, of course, the reality of the strategic goals and objectives, that's, okay, so what can we really do? So we've got all these great ideas, and what can we really accomplish? And, of course, the action, the business plan and the master plan together, how are we going to make actionable items so that we can move it forward and not just have a pretty coffee table book that everybody can look at as a future of a zoo that's not really going to happen. So it had to be something that we could really, really accomplish. Of course, governance was a big issue for the Friends and the county. Right now, we're governed by the county with the huge support that we absolutely have to have from the Friends organization. And like zoos around the country, with many of these agencies, when they're redoing their master and strategic plans, they have to evaluate whether that's the most successful governance model that you could have, or should there be a modification? Should the Friends take more responsibility on or less, or county taking more or less, and coming up with the best plan possible? Out of that, we knew that was a really a topic that needed a much deeper dive into finding out whether what we could do to move forward. In addition to that piece, we also found that the interpretive plan, what visitors experience as they go through the zoo, the graphics that they see, the experiences that they have, what message do we want them to take away? That was another one that we really couldn't get too far into, but we identified as something we want to do a master plan for an interpretive plan as well.
So the board approved and adopted the plan this past April. You may have seen some information about it in the newspaper, so we're very excited. So now we're ready and willing and able to get underway. So here is our site map. So we're going to walk around this a little bit. And on your table, you have copies of our member magazine. This is a magazine that goes to our membership 4 times a year. And in the center spread, this map is reproduced. So if you want to take a look at that and look at it a little bit further. But so is everybody all ready? You don't need your coats. You don't need your boots. We're going to go for a walk, okay? So first of all, and I have this dandy little pointer here. So let me show you. Where did it go? There it is. You came in here, okay? This entrance sometimes gets very, very congested. We bring people down into like this little bottleneck, and then we disperse our guests. So we wanted to take a good, hard look at that. The other thing that I will draw your attention to, do you see the red line around our zoo? That's our boundary, what we currently own. Those are our acres. So when we worked with Zoo Advisors and an architectural firm out of Wichita, we were walking them around the zoo, and we said, oh my gosh, we've built everywhere. We don't have a single place to do a thing. When they brought this map back, all of what you're going to hear is within the boundaries of the acreage that we currently own, with the exception right here on this little area, which is additional parking. But everything we want to do for the animals and the guests, we can do in our own footprint. So that was hugely exciting for us, because that means it's within our control. We don't have to move mountains and hills and all of that in order to make this happen. The other thing is the architect who worked with us was from Wichita, Kansas. So if you visualize Kansas, pretty flat. So when he got here and saw our views and our hills and our topography and the fact that we were an urban zoo, but our vistas give you a very broad perspective and it feels very expansive, he was so excited it was hard to keep his enthusiasm down. So he's all about Syracuse and all about loving Central New York. So I think that's important. So when we, I'm just going to bring you into the entry sequence. What we're looking at for this entrance where you just came in, you know, the county, Sandra mentioned the Save the Rain projects. We just did 5 wonderful projects here at the zoo under the auspices of the Save the Rain program. We are recapturing 6 million gallons of water that used to go into the storm drains and thus out into Onondaga Lake. So it's all being repurposed around the zoo, and we are a host site for other communities who want to come and see the effectiveness of these kinds of projects. So we want to absolutely continue to use this entrance, but what we're looking at is making this an event entrance, so folks like yourselves coming into this event space would use this entrance, and also our school entrance. There are days when we have tons of buses out in front parked up in the parking lot, and we could have anywhere from 500 to 1,000 children here on a school visit. So we think bringing them into this entrance helps kind of divert our other visitors for that day into another entrance, and that entrance is positioned here. What this does, you'll see that we ended up with kind of two loops for the zoo, one over here and one over here. If we bring people in through this, one of our consultants likened it to bringing people in at the knot in the bow tie. And I thought that visual was really striking. So what we want to do is a nice entry plaza here so that when you come in with your families, you know the first thing you do when you get your admission tickets and everything, you stop. And you say, okay, who needs to go to the bathroom? Who needs something to drink? Where do we want to go first? Who do you want to see first? So we need to allow people that space to get themselves centered and plan their visit to the zoo. One of the things that came out in our vision statement is that we want our guests, our animals, and our staff to have the best day ever. So that's our goal for everybody that walks in our doors. And if we have time, I'll tell you a little story about how that came about. So we've got our guests coming in. They've parked here. They've walked through the entry exhibit, gotten themselves positioned. And also, you will see right here an animal health hospital. In our AZA accreditation standards for the last two rounds of accreditation, and we're reaccredited every 5 years, they've mentioned that our clinic that we currently have, while state-of-the-art back in the early 80s when people could look in and see the procedures that were happening, it's undersized for the collection we have right now. So that's a priority project. And so we think it's very important to have it front and center. It'll be an opportunity for people to see into the animal health clinic. You'll be able to see some of the procedures. It'll be an educational opportunity. But we thought by citing it right here in the entrance when you're coming in, you're going to know that the welfare of our animals is upper foremost in our minds, and that's what we dedicate ourselves to. The other building over here would be an administrative building. We're very pushed for space right here in this building. All of our space goes to our animals. People come second. So we are very, very squished. I think a lot of organizations have that problem when you start to grow. So what we'd like to do is move people into an administrative building. The building that we're in would be turned over to our education department so we could expand our educational offerings, because right now we're almost at capacity in the census on some of our programs. A wonderful problem to have, but how do you solve it so you can service many, many more guests? So with that, I'm going to let Ted take over on some of the animal side.
Okay. One thing, right next to the proposed main new entrance, there's an entry exhibit to the right of that. And a lot of zoos that are trying to kind of meet that message of best day ever, or starting your experience as soon as possible when you arrive at the zoo, is to have an exhibit that the people will see even before they get to the ticket booths and pay their entry. They're going to start seeing animals. Starting that experience as positively as possible right from the very beginning. So as we come into the zoo through the, one other thing about the Animal Health Center, behind there's a quarantine building. That's one other thing that we have. We have a combined clinic and quarantine space right now, which is really not a great idea. Bringing the new animals in, they all have to go through a quarantine of up to 30 days, and they really shouldn't be anywhere near the shared space with the clinic animals or the rest of the collection. So we'd like to have a completely separate quarantine space that wouldn't be open to the public, because it's specifically for animals that are coming into the collection and need to be quiet and go through their testing. So as you come through, the first thing we want to see after you've come through that entry plaza is another exhibit, as start keeping that experience really enlivened and letting people see that this is what they've arrived at a zoo and there's animals around. So this is a current reindeer yard and swan pond, and the idea would be to change that into an African savanna exhibit, possibly having giraffe, which are very popular and the number one animal that people ask about in this community, why we don't have. And the topography there, this is one of the places that our folks from Wichita loved. The topography there, the viewing trail is actually above the exhibit. So you're looking down at the exhibit. It's about the perfect height for a giraffe to walk up to that edge of the railing and you'd be able to see it eye to eye. And also, in funding and thinking about funding these exhibits, feeding giraffe for a little bit of an upcharge is you can see them, you can view them, but if you want a special experience or a photo opportunity to feed them some romaine lettuce leaves or something, this would be a great opportunity to do that. Around the country, we've kind of gotten away, like many zoos have, from the zoogeographic isolated areas, like Africa's here and Asia's here and South America's over here. But we'd like to get back to that for a few reasons. So if that would start the African experience with the African savanna, of course, penguins don't really fit into that, but they're kind of separate above that. But then create where the guanaco are right now and the bighorn sheep and the gray wolves, maybe develop that area into other African animals. And one of the main reasons is not because they like being next to each other, but because it gives the opportunity for our educators and the zoo guests to experience animals that would come from the same ecosystem and how they fit together and how they earn their livings within the same environment. And it also has been proven to show that when there's more connections of the exhibits and the animals you're seeing, it makes people stay longer. It makes them try to understand those things. Not everyone, but a lot of people will stay in an area longer, and that's one of our ultimate goals, is to have people stay in each one of these areas a little bit longer so that there's interactive things in every one of these areas. We want to do things that will keep the people in that area a little bit longer.
So I think Ted has said a couple of things that are important there for you to know. We have 370,000 visitors that come every year. Our goal and our trajectory is to get to 500,000, 500,000. Mm-hmm. So when you look at that, what do you do as far as your parking, the eating facilities, the things for the children to do? You have to take all of that into consideration, because your average length of stay, right now our average length of stay is about 2 hours. So our average length of stay conceivably could go to 3 hours. So that means your parking lot doesn't turn over as quickly. Mm-hmm. That means that there's going to be additional folks that need to be fed in the restaurants and things that we have here on site. So those are all of the things that we're taking into consideration. The other thing that you'll hear us talking about is a concept called parallel play or pocket play. And those are small areas within exhibit areas for children to play and mimic the actions of the animals in that area. And we're seeing that as a trend in other areas of the zoos in the country. It's very, very popular, and it moves away from having like a playground space, which is typical of what you might see in the other parks. How could we make it a little bit more unique here at the zoo? So those are some of the things that you're going to hear about as well. The other thing is, when we take a look at this, how are we going to pay for it? So some of these things we're talking about, you know, that's a big question. So some of the things we're talking about are maybe experiences that if somebody wants to participate, there might be another ticket that they would purchase, but if they don't want to participate, they don't have to do that. One of the areas we're looking at is this area right here. As you're walking up to the tiger exhibit, this would be the area immediately to your left that is kind of a road and an access area. Now, we think this is a super great spot for this topic I'm going to tell you about, but the folks that have looked have even found another spot for us. But we are looking at creating an adventure course and a zip line here at our zoo. And there hasn't been any 10 to 15-year-old that I have said that to whose eyes don't go big and say, wow, that would be fabulous. What we want to do is reconnect with the demographic that we tend to lose around that age. You know, they've been to the zoo a lot of times when they were little. This gives everyone a reason to come back, spend some more time with us. It would also be maybe mom and the older kids would want to do the zip line or the adventure course. Dad would take the smaller kids and they'd go on and see the animals. Something for everybody that's coming to the zoo. So we think, and again, this would be something right off of this path. You would access it by another walkway. But and if it's something that you want to do, that's great. And if it's not, then you can continue on your visit to the zoo. But we think it's a wonderful way to kind of reconnect. So as we come around this space, this is probably the most dramatic and ambitious space that we're looking at. This is right where the tigers are. Everybody know where the tigers are? Beautiful tigers. We love our tigers. But right across the hillside, there is an opportunity to do another. This would kind of be our Asian area at the zoo. So we might do orangs on that hillside. They love hills. Everybody loves orangs. They're so incredibly smart. This would be where our snow leopards, we might do expanded space for our snow leopards. But right here, in the areas right now where we just have smaller exhibits on the wildlife trail, we're looking at doing an Asian plaza. So this would be a building. So imagine, if you will, when you're traveling on Grand Avenue and you look up and there is this beautiful, beautiful Asian-inspired building. And what that would be would give us conference and meeting space. It would be a restaurant there for folks that are in that area of the zoo in order to sit and have a meal. It would be a pocket play area for the children, and reasons to stop and relax and spend a little bit more time. And you are surrounded by animals. Everywhere you look is an animal that you can enjoy. Red panda, orangs, the tigers, you are immersed in an animal environment. And we think that that would really, really be exciting for our visitors. So as you walk up this walkway, and now you're getting out to where the elephants are right now, there's another area over here that we could do a treetop experience. So you could walk on that boardwalk. You're at treetop height. There might be a great big nest there that the kids and the adults could play in. Those kinds of things might be a... I always talk about the fact that we envision a rope bridge to go over there, and then also maybe a more stable bridge for people like me that would want to use that one. But all kinds of ways in which the family to share a really wonderful experience here at the zoo. I'm going to let Ted talk to you a little bit about what we have planned for our Asian elephants. Remember, we have 6 right now and 2 babies expected in the spring.
Ooh. Couldn't be more excited about that.
Or anxious.
One other point to make before I get to the elephants is all the enhancements to a lot of these exhibits, we'd like to make them mixed species exhibits. So like the African savanna, although we'd like to consider giraffe, we would probably have some type of gazelle and possibly white rhino, depending upon the space and what it actually looks like in the end. But we'd like to have that as a complex a group of animals as possible because they really like to interact with each other. The single species exhibits are kind of tired, and it doesn't give the animals as much to do as we'd like to. With the exception of elephants, they don't play so well with other animals. So moving to the elephants, the community has been supportive of our elephant program for so long. And a few years ago, we had to make a decision. The rules in the AZA changed, and you could become either a breeding facility with a much, much larger space and have a breeding group of animals, or a holding space for geriatric animals, 2 to 4 geriatric animals. At that time, we had Siri, who's not geriatric yet, but she's getting there. We considered that if we were going to keep them down in this lower yard, where it's just too small for a breeding group of animals. So we kind of did a lot of surveying and so forth and talking to the community, and the county certainly was behind this. The friends were behind it. The staff was behind it. Is making a facility like Asian Elephant Preserve, which is state-of-the-art. It's one of the biggest elephant enclosures in the country. We have one of the largest herds in the country now with 6 animals and 2 on the way. We have a new bull dock in India. Our old bull has gone on to another facility, soon to be at the National Zoo as part of their breeding program, which is a great, great thing. So what we'd like to do, we've got the one large orange area is the current new day yard that was opened in 2011. And there you'll notice a big kidney-shaped pool there that's not there right now, but we're in design for that right now. As Janet mentioned earlier, our accreditation process, one of the things that has been in that our last accreditation cycle that they mentioned that we really need is a pool for the elephants to get in. They had that down here, but they don't have it up in the new yard. So that's got to be a priority for us, and that's one of the first things we're going to start with. One other really great thing is across the public walkway is a white-lipped deer yard, which we have 9 white-lipped deer, the largest breeding herd in the country of a very rare animal. And they don't use all that space, though. So we'd like to reduce the space of their exhibit and include an area for the elephants to get there. The elephants would go under the public walkway. So you, as visitors pass over, they can see the elephants moving back and forth from the hillside new exhibit to their old day yard exhibit. And then to get back to the barn, they could either go the way through their big day yard, or we'd like to enhance it again by having a at-grade crossing for the elephants. A couple other zoos have done this where at certain times during the day, the gates close, the public has to wait on either side, and the elephants can walk right in front of them. So it gives them a great up-close and personal experience with the elephants and be able to see how magnificent they are up close. And that would kind of continue the loop around to make the exhibits really a lot more complex. We can move animals in any direction, lots more space for mothers and babies to get away if they want to from the group and so forth. There's right now the three holding yards. It's kind of hard to see in them sometimes, so we'd like to enhance the viewing area and have some type of platform so people can enjoy the animals that are out in the on the small yards that are attached to the barn. And the pool that Janet's showing right now, that's not really a pool. It's kind of a play area, a wet play area for kids. Again, that parallel play would come in so the kids are playing in the water where the elephants are playing in the water across the walkway. And although this climate isn't all that conducive to having water play certain times of the year, some statuary that are fountains or something that kids can still play with or on in the winter when the water isn't in there would be a great opportunity for them.
So I think everybody, I don't know anybody that wouldn't like to see elephants walking underneath the boardwalk as you're walking over it. I think that would be a pretty amazing experience. And I'll just tell you a real quick story. I was up at the elephant barn a couple of weeks ago, and Siri, although, you know, I think many of you in this room know Siri, right? You know her personally because she's been here and has been our wonderful ambassador for her species for so, so many years. But she is getting up there in years. She's 48 years old this year. So like those of us who are getting older, she has a little bit of arthritis. So our keepers, our wonderful, wonderful staff here, have worked up a series of geriatric elephant yoga that she goes through. And I have to tell you, her range of motion has increased and improved to such a degree. So I think that's just an example of the efforts that we go to make sure that our animals receive the very best of care. And while they're here with us, we want to be thinking about their welfare and their benefit all the time. So Siri's doing a great job. And so we've talked about the fact, when we mentioned this at the board meeting, the board members wanted to go up and participate with her so that we could all limber up together. So who knows? We may have that opportunity at some point for guests and everyone to go and involve yoga with Siri. So as we walk around the path here, again, we're continuing on the path, we're looking at coming down into this area where, you know, one of the things that we have here at our zoo that I don't think we take advantage of is our wonderful botanical collection and how we would like to expand that. As you drove up the driveway this morning, I hope you noticed on your left a big, beautiful tree that right now is green and it's red and it's gold, and that is a sweet gum tree. And from what I understand from my colleague over here on my left, is that sweet gum trees don't usually do very well this far north. So that is a wonderful example of a beautiful, beautiful tree that has survived over time and has such character. But we'd like to call attention to those kinds of things that we have here at our zoo and develop our grounds more into being a botanical garden so other visitors would like to come in and see that. So we're looking at a wildflower walk here or some kind of an experience that way. You know, our grounds, I think, look magnificent, and that's a tribute to the county staff and also to a group of volunteers here, the Men's Garden Club, who have been involved with us for many, many years. They're here every Thursday, regardless of the weather, and they help keep our grounds this way. So we absolutely want to do a shout-out for them because it's wonderful, wonderful work that they do.
And now as you come through that path area, that's where the butterfly garden is right now, and there's lots of potential to enhance the botanical collection there. The Explorer's Outpost, a new little area for kids to see animal skulls and what animals eat, is a little building that we just put in this year. And right next to that, there's another garden area that we've been talking about doing a sensory garden for children so that they can touch and smell and taste some of the plants and herbs that we want to grow there. So that's another botanical advancement that we'd like to do. So that brings you down into that whole blue area, which is one of the premier green infrastructure projects that the county did within the Save the Rain project, which recirculates from our main waterfowl pond right out in the courtyard here. It recirculates all the water up into that area that Janet's got the pointer on now, which is the new crane exhibit. And there's a nice waterfall there. It very slowly, passively, moves the water down through a wetland system with bulrushes and all different types of native wetland plants that help filter and clean the water before it gets to the duck pond again. Historically, during the summer months, we would drain the pool and clean the pool once a week and sometimes twice a week when the algae was really bad. This year, we only had to clean it twice through the whole season. So with this system in place, so it's a remarkable. We also were using water from, we turn on the spigot to fill this with a fire hose all the time to refill it. Now we're collecting all the rainwater from up near the snow leopard area and some other areas up on the high points of the zoo that all filter into this system, which is really, really great. That moves us down to the contact barn, which is, you know, where our domestic animals are. As part of that project, because we had to move a couple of the yards, we actually increased the size of the animal holding yards over there. We've started to build up that collection because agriculture is such an important part of Central New York that we'd like to really demonstrate that, have some more interactive encounters with people and things like our goats. We've got a couple really great small baby goats this year, and the ponies and pigs and chickens and all the other things that the people can get up close to and personal. So we'd like to keep that the way it is. Everyone really liked that. And then the new amphitheater that the Friends did a couple years ago, which is where we do all our animal demonstrations, where Siri comes down to meet and greet people all summer. Anakin does a bird show, the bird staff. And then next to that is the old elephant exhibit, which is one of the priority projects. Or not quite yet, that'll be down the road, but it'll be one of the sooner rather than later projects, because right now it doesn't have anything in it. We use it for Siri in the summer, but it's a great building structurally that we'd really like to do something, a mixed species exhibit like white-handed gibbons, which used to be very popular out on Gibbon Island, the island in the middle of the courtyard that we had for so many years, and we'd like to bring those back and maybe have them with small clawed otters, which are a really social little otter from Asia. Come from the same area that the gibbons do, and they could interact together and have a parallel play with water for the otters and children, and some swinging devices for kids to play and mimic what the gibbons are doing next door.
So, are you exhausted? We've gone through this map pretty quickly, so we'd be glad to entertain any questions for you. But I think, you know, a little bit I'll tell you about the best day ever. When I first started here at the zoo, it was in 2006 in July, the height of our busy season. And I'd come out of an academic setting, and so I wanted to go out and spend my time at lunch hour in the park as often as I could so I could hear our guests and kind of observe how they were using the zoo and help me gain more knowledge. Well, one day I'm out there, and there's a mother, and she's got two little girls with her. And the youngest was, I would say, probably between 6, 7 years old, and she was so excited. She was just bristling. You know how little kids do. She was, oh. And she said, Mommy, this is going to be the best day ever. So that just solidified it in my mind as to what we're all here for. We need to make that experience happen for that little guest. And so it really kind of resonated when we were talking about the strategic and master plan, because the best day ever can translate into the days that we want our animals to have. The best day ever translates into how we want our staff to be treated and how they come to work. So you will see that over the next coming months, you're going to see that best day ever resonated around the zoo and in some of our advertising and things, because we think it's keenly important that everybody come to the zoo, learn what they're going to learn. You know, there's a lot of things you learn here at the zoo that you don't even know you're learning. And so it's a great experience. We have a unique platform in which to get messaging out and have people enjoy their time here at the zoo. So.
Thank you. That was great. Thank you. Okay, question.
A quick comment. Where are the penguins?
The penguins. Pointer. They're not labeled, but they're here. So we are going to go back to our architects and make sure that the penguins get labeled, but they are right here.
Yeah.
Okay.
And my comment is my friend Ollie Club would not allow me to get out of here happily without mentioning that as you expand the parking lot, I hope you think about putting solar canopy over it, like Cincinnati Zoo has.
We are. Isn't that exciting? And also lighting that is powered by solar. So we are actively looking at that.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you.
Right. One of the things that we do get asked are what are our priority projects. So I would say to you the elephant pool, we're actively fundraising and looking at concepts for the elephant pool. the animal health care facility, and the African savanna exhibit. Those are our three priority projects short term.
The Animal Health Center in particular, we have a contract. Many people don't know that the veterinary care that the animals receive, we have a contract with Cornell University and their veterinary college. So they have a residency program specifically designed because of their involvement here at the zoo for exotic animal veterinarians, which is a very up-and-coming profession for veterinarians. And so there's two residents that come, and we have two attending veterinarians, and they bring students every week, veterinary students. And we'd like to grow that program when we have a larger facility to do it with.
I'm sure in the zoos around the country, there are certain animals that tend to attract people more than others to the zoo. And I know you have about 700 animals here now. Do you have a prioritization on what new animals you could bring in that would follow along with what's the most attracting, a priority of those? And then a little bit more about how you actually get those animals.
I think those are great questions. But I will say, I'm just going to start the answer, and then I will let Ted take over because he's the animal expert in the room. But I would say to you that as I'm out in the community, the most requested animal I get asked for that we don't currently have is giraffes. And again, another little story. I was up on the animal trail, the wildlife trail, and there's a mother and a little girl. And again, little girl has lots of things to say, and she put her hands on her hips, and she said to her mother, "It's not really a zoo unless they have a giraffe." So we listen to our guests. But I will let Ted answer the rest of your question.
So historically, when a zoo was successful with one of those charismatic animals like snow leopards or something, they would kind of keep it a secret and grow that population and sell them for a lot of money to other zoos. Those days are long gone. And because of the plight of so many species in the wild, zoos have become very collaborative with the efforts to breed, especially endangered species like the snow leopard. Asian elephants are a perfect example. You could buy, they were up to $1 million an animal not that long ago. But now there's management programs within AZA. And so the very first thing we'll do, we know we're going to have some of these new exhibit spaces. So our staff is very aggressively researching what species would be appropriate for our climate, for other animals that we already have that maybe could cohabitate with them. And then we'll talk to the management folks and let them work our process or our plan into their process of planning how many animals they're going to be able to produce in 3 or 4 years when we might want those animals. So, for example, giraffe or those antelope we were talking about getting. So we've already communicated with them to see if in the next 5 years there's going to be available young animals that they're going to need placement for, because the space within AZA zoos is very finite for all the species. So they're very highly managed populations. Genetically is the key. They want to increase and have as much genetic diversity in each one of the populations. So we'll communicate a lot with them. It's not just about Janet wants a giraffe, so we're going to get a giraffe anymore. I mean, it used to be that pretty easy to do that, but now there's so many more steps and years of planning that go into bringing something in. And we always like to listen to the visitors, as Janet said, and know what they would like. But we have a much bigger responsibility in terms of education and providing space for animals that need help.
I'll piggyback on that. When we talk about giraffes, you know that this isn't their typical climate. So we feel that the husbandry guidelines for giraffes have evolved to the point where we feel comfortable having them here, because one of the things we're looking at is their barn or their indoor space would have to be really spectacular, because we know they're going to spend a lot of time indoors. So we want to provide for that. But we also want to provide that this would be a barn that our guests could go into. Because if you're coming to the zoo and you want to see giraffes, you don't want to only see them during the summer, you want to see them all the time. So that would be what we would take into consideration when we do our concepting for that particular space.
Janet, will you use your laser light and show us where the sweet gum is? And then I'll ask my question.
Yeah, so Ted, the sweet gum is right here.
So if you're coming down the path, out of the parking lots and down around, if you look up in this naturalized area, it's the giant tree right in the center of this bank.
Good. So as you leave, it's going to be on your right.
Nature, the TV show, had showed us the Japanese monkeys that live in snow country. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a natural for Syracuse. Tell us about it. Have you thought about it?
We actually had a group of Japanese macaques when the zoo reopened in the 80s. If you, maybe you remember in the, where the peafowl are right now in that glassed-in exhibit out in the courtyard, it certainly is a species we'd like to bring back. But that exhibit, we met the holding and husbandry guidelines when we got them. But as the troop grew, our space was not appropriate for them. And so we'd love to bring them back in a much larger space than that, but we had a better placement for them. They did some damage to that exhibit that needed to be addressed, so we moved those some to a better home, and then we'll certainly consider those in the future. Because you're absolutely right, it's one of the few primates that, that do well in a colder climate.
One of my peers recently returned from the West Coast, having visited with the grandchildren, taking them through a zoo on the West Coast, and claims that she'll never take her grandchildren to another zoo because she was nickeled and dimed. She knew the tickets were expensive. She knew that she'd be buying the kids lunch, but she did not know in advance with enough information. She either had to say no at every turn or hand out $3 to $5. So how is Syracuse going to remain a friendly zoo and not kill grandparents?
I think that's an excellent question, because I think it's that delicate balance. One of the things when we went into our strategic and master planning process is that we didn't want to lose what made us unique now. And one of those things is that the intimacy that you can have with the animals and the fact that we are affordable. So that's why I think when we talk about a governance structure that includes the county and the Friends, that's probably what makes the most sense for our visitors, because that's the way that we can keep things affordable. But I do think there's also some, you know, we were out at the Phoenix Zoo. We go to a lot of zoos in the course of our conferences and things. And so when you get to a zoo that's completely privatized, that's when the cost goes up. It's $24.95 to get into the zoo at the Phoenix. But the other thing I think is very important for our community is what is authentic and what will our community support. So we're going to be very, very mindful of that. Make sure that we get the messaging out so that people are aware of that, so that they know if there's, you know, our additional payment might be $3 to get some lettuce for the giraffes or things like that. But we're not going to have a great deal of that happening. We know that people do not, you know, that's very difficult for grandparents. Who wants to say no to a little one that wants to do all of those things? So we're going to try and strike that delicate balance and work with our community as to what's authentic for us.
Two questions. Where's the octopus going to go? Is he going to stay where he is with all the tropical fish? And then the related to the last one, the gift shop. Mm-hmm.
So the octopus will stay there. I mean, it's a new exhibit. We've gone through a few iterations of the filtration and lighting and so forth, and have come up with a really great exhibit, I think. The public are very happy with it. It's easy to see the animals that are in there. We found species of starfish and fish that cohabitate well with the octopus. And so we're going to maintain that just where it is. We were always looking for a premier exhibit to let people see right as soon as they got to the ramp, and that's worked really well.
The gift shop, the new gift shop would be in this building here. So we'll keep our gift shop where it is right now. In fact, over the wintertime, we're going to undergo a significant renovation in that space, but that's where it would be planned for in the new master plan.
How many people are employed at the zoo right now, whether it's the Friends or the county, it doesn't matter? And then how much expansion would be necessary, I guess, overall, with the, you know, once the whole scheme is complete?
Well, I'll answer it on my side. On the Friends side, we have 22 full-time staff, 16 part-time staff. We also, on any given week on our payroll, might be upwards of 50 people, because we also have a catering operation. So it depends on how many events we're doing. Last year we did 244 catered events in addition to the zoo events. So we're very, very busy in this space, and we like that very much. And then in the summer, the Friends hire the seasonal staff to work in the gift shop and the Jungle Cafe. So we hire another 40 to 50 people in the summer.
And on the county side, there's 27 animal staff. There's about 11 labor crew and maintenance staff. And much like the Friends, during the summer we hire lots and lots of extra people. We have a great internship program here. The zoo field is a very competitive field now, and most zoos won't consider someone unless they've done a pretty substantial internship or a paid summer position at a zoo, an accredited zoo. So we have anywhere from 15 to 25 interns every semester and then throughout the summer. And we've the county did not want to hire more full-time positions, and we actually cut a few positions a few years ago. And to make up for that, we've been able to have a lot more temporary seasonal folks throughout the year, which has filled in the blanks for us, which has been very helpful.
Okay, you had a question.
Has any thought been given to either a monorail or some other people mover?
We certainly have. And we love the topography of the zoo and the narrow trails that we have, but it makes it very problematic to figure out where that could fit without impeding the foot traffic and, you know, being crisscrossing across where the normal visitors are. During the strategic and master planning process, one of the things we looked at was it's like a chairlift from a ski mountain that would come from somewhere down here to get people up onto the hill. And Janet had a great, one of those meetings, she had a great head-scratcher moment and said, but most people, I mean, it's tough to get on those things if you've been to a ski resort. And, you know, and to the people that we would want to move aren't going to be very, it will be difficult for them to get on and off of this thing. And then staffing it with three or four staff on, you know, each end and all that, it was just not a good option. We continue to look at different things. We'd love to have something. As we expand, we're going to continue to look, but right now there is no plan to have something like that.
I think tourism is just so important for our local economy, and your success really in bringing visitors is really terrific. So I wonder, are you doing any advertising that is beyond the community here? And then secondly, do you have any relationship with Destiny, you know, to do like an exhibit or something there that would attract people here?
The answer to both of those is yes. We advertise in the Ottawa area and in Toronto. We've expanded our billboards out to Albany. We feel we have a real opportunity in the Albany area because Albany does not have a zoo. And if folks there want to go to the zoo, they might go down into the city. But we think that just coming down the thruway is a great option for them. So we're doing a lot of advertising in that area. If you go to Destiny, I sit on the executive committee of the Convention and Visitors Bureau. So I work with my colleagues there all the time as far as cross-promotion. And right now, we have a billboard-sized advertisement at Destiny. If you walk into the canyon area, it's right where you go and get your caramel corn and where you get your cookies. So that has been a terrific visibility. It would be very hard for us to take animals there. So we have to figure another way to have a zoo presence that is manageable for us from a cost standpoint. But yeah, we are doing all of those things. And if you've got other ideas, let us know.
What is that stairway to nowhere that you see, I think, off of Grand Avenue? Is there some history to that? And is it within the red line or not?
I'm going to let Ted take that one.
The one from, as you see coming up our entrance? Yeah. That used to be the entrance to the zoo the for foot traffic. I mean, there was a beautiful garden down below, which when we were redesigning, it was kind of a lawn with the urn is the only thing that stayed that had been there historically. But in the pictures that we found from the early 1900s, it actually looks a lot like it does now with the rain gardens, the circular oval-shaped gardens down there. And then people could walk up those stairs to a gathering area at the top, and then they'd come to the waterfowl area, which was right where the main parking lot is now. So we've talked about maintaining that better than it is. There's some damaged areas that's in the long-range plan to do that. The really neat thing is on the back side of the zoo down to Grand Ave, there's another set that you can't see at all. It's in the woods. It comes up through the ravine, but we stumbled across it when we were doing a perimeter fence check. And it's beautiful old brownstone stairway, and we'd love to reinstate that at some point down the road as well.
Okay. Thank you, Janet Agostini and Ted Fox. It's been a great walk through the zoo.
Great.